well, here's the journey we've been on this week. And we've been trying to connect the three things of adult learning, Christian community, and the common good. And Judy and I kind of consider ourselves a bit of ambassadors for adult learning in churches, which is not always the top priority item in church communities. And so we've, you know, tried to develop some learning materials that are different, that are really good, and that have the principles of good learning embedded in them. So this week we've tried to sort of progress from the first connect the dots between adult learning and Christian and learning in churches in the first session last Monday up to today, when we're going to learn of God's abundance and how that can help enhance the common good. So this is our final session. And as we've said before, adults learn best by connecting prior knowledge with new knowledge. So our prior knowledge today is going to be the really familiar story of the feeding of the 5,000. And I think that was the topic of one of our Bible studies earlier in the week. So that's our prior knowledge. We're going to connect that with the new knowledge of scarcity thinking and abundance thinking that we mentioned a session or two ago from the theologian Walter Brueggemann. And we'll also connect the dots, as I said, between learning of God's abundance and enhancing the common good here. So, how many of you are gardeners? Okay, we've got a couple of gardeners. How many of you two gardeners have grown zucchini?
What?
Zucchini.
You are the people that have the true understanding of God's abundance. All you have to say is the poor mucha maligned zucchini is really a good example of God's abundance. In fact, about a month ago, the newspaper in Cleveland, The Plain Dealer, had a column that pronounced August 8th as "Leave a Zucchini on Your Neighbor's Porch Day."
And we don't have any. We didn't know that.
So our daughter-in-law, who's from Cleveland and gets the Cleveland Plain Dealer, sent us this email. And she didn't title what it was, but in the title of the email, she says, "Don't even think about it." She does not like zucchini, and every time there's something about zucchini, she sends it to us.
So, there we are, sharing God's abundance, zucchini style.
We're going to begin with a story that's well known to all of us. When Mark, in his gospel, tells the story of the 5,000 that were fed, it becomes a conversation between Jesus and the disciples. And when we read this morning, we want you to be the disciples. And as a group, you're going to read what the disciples say to Jesus. And I'll be the narrator, Dick will be Jesus, and the whole group will read the disciples when we put that up on the screen that says disciples.
Welcome.
Hi. So, the reading of 5,000 hungry people are fed from Mark 6. The apostles gathered around Jesus and told him all they had done and taught. He said to them,
"Come away to a deserted place all by yourselves and rest a while."
For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in a boat to a deserted place by themselves. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they hurried there on foot from all the towns and arrived there ahead of them. So he went ashore. He saw a great crowd, and he had compassion for them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. When it grew late, the disciples came to him and said,
"This is a deserted place, and the hour is now very late. Send them away so that they may go into the surrounding country and villages and buy something for themselves to eat."
"You give them something to eat."
And the disciples said,
"Oh."
Are we to go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give it to them to eat?
How many loaves have you? Go and see.
5 and 2 fish.
Then he ordered them to get all the people to sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. And of fifties. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven, blessed and broke the loaves and gave them to his disciples to set before the people. And he divided the 2 fish among them all. And all ate and were filled. And they took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces and of the fish. Those who had eaten the loaves numbered 5,000 men.
Plus women and children, presumably.
Right.
So here's what just happened. Jesus and the disciples try to escape the crowds. The crowds follow along. Jesus has compassion, teaches them, then everybody gets hungry. Disciples just don't get Jesus' trust in God's abundance. That's scarcity thinking. A little food is found. Jesus demonstrates God's abundance. Let's pray together. Dear God,
help us to remember and truly comprehend your awesome generosity. Through your Holy Spirit, enable us to be thankful and to share the abundance you have given us. Amen.
Okay, now let's take a look at this abundance we just talked about. Just now, you were the disciples, very anxious about the scarcity of food. Now we want you to listen to the story again, and this time, imagine that you are a person in the crowd that is listening to Jesus. This guided meditation on the feeding of the 5,000 is written by our daughter, Pastor Julie Rooning Shearer. So relax, get in a comfortable position, close your eyes, and just imagine that you are a person in the crowd.
And please interrupt all writing and meaning so you can close your eyes.
You are one of the people on the hillside. Look around. What do you see? Imagine the sounds and smells. Who is with you? Why are you here? What desires, anxieties, hopes bring you to hear the teacher? The teacher is speaking. His words fill your mind with ideas so beautiful and spacious that your heart seems to grow. Your cares fall away. You are wrapped in attention. You don't even notice how long you've been there. But now people are beginning to get restless. Your stomach growls. You see the teacher's disciples discussing something in hushed voices. Then Jesus says loudly to his disciples, "You give them something to eat." The disciples confer together and then finally announce to the crowd, "Anyone who has something to eat, please put it in the basket to share." You become aware that you are very hungry. A basket is coming to you now. What do you have in your bag? What do the contents of your bag mean to you? Do you put anything in the basket? The disciples collect the basket. Not much is in them, just 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. But the teacher doesn't seem to be worried. He tells you to sit in groups of 50. It is the number of the Jubilee, a radical idea of the redistribution of wealth from the old days. People were supposed to forgive debts, give land away, and give the poor a fresh start. Is such a thing possible? The teacher takes the bread and lifts it high. He blesses it, breaks it, and then begins to pass it around. What are you thinking as the loaf is passed? What do you see when the loaf gets to you? You pull off a piece of the bread, smell its yeasty smell. You pass the bread to the next person and taste a bite. How does it taste? Now others are pulling pieces off the bread. Can you see their faces? How do they look? Now the disciples are passing baskets again. The baskets are filling up with bread and fish, pieces piled on top of one another. Is there bread in your bag? Is there bread in your hand? What do you do when the basket comes to you? The teacher is looking at you. His eyes are soft and compassionate. What does he say to you? How do you respond? It's now time to return to your home. It is late and the shadows lengthen. What will you tell those at home about this teacher and the loaves of bread? Now, as we return to the present, remember what Jesus said to you, and give thanks for this time, this encounter, and for his word to you. Amen. Okay, let's reflect for a moment. How did it feel to sit quietly with yourself and your feelings about giving and receiving? What was in your bag? What did Jesus say to you? What would you like to share about this experience? Reflect silently now for a minute on what we just did. Okay, now pair up with someone and share about these questions. Any thought you have on any one of these questions or all of them, we'll give you 3 minutes to share up, to pair up and share. Let's see, do we have even numbers?
Be good not to do it in couples.
Okay, Dick, if you go with Hugh, I think that'll work. 2, 4. Okay, can we come back together again now? Yeah. Is anybody willing to share something of what was in your conversation about any of these questions? What would you like to share about this? What would you tell somebody if you went home and said about the bread? Anybody comfortable sharing that part?
It reminded me of one of my colleagues, clergy colleagues, this past summer. This was the text series. We were 5 weeks on Mark 6. And so 1 week she baked bread. And she divided the loaf into three, or there were three pieces of bread. One went to the right side of the congregation, one went to the left side of the congregation, one went to the balcony. And she instructed them to, you know, take a piece and pass it on. And the bread had gotten out there, and it wasn't long before the balcony erupted in laughter. And she asked them what was going on, and they're like, oh no, we'll tell you later. And so after the service, she found out what happened, and here the loaf went from person to person. They broke off a little bit and had a little bit, and it got to the small child who took the loaf and proceeded to open their mouth and eat the loaf. And that was the end of the passing of the loaf. And so my mind was playing with the abundance, and yet the fact that we can't make the abundance ourselves, it's God's abundance, and the fact that the children inherit the kingdom. And so it, in that, you know, there was an inheritance of gift and of abundance for that child to be able to see.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing.
That's fun. Anybody else have one they want to share? Yeah, Joyce.
I was saying that since we had just been to Galilee, not it was just a year and a half ago, I could very, very easily picture a nice sunny day on a hill in Galilee. And since I just did the first-person account of a very proud mother whose son shared his about his food for our vacation Bible school, I could see a mother and a son. But then we got talking about the miracle. What was the miracle? There are some commentators who talk about the miracle being people who had all had that food, and the miracle was they opened up what they were keeping for just themselves. Now, when I was doing this to the vacation Bible school of little kids, we just had the miracle. But then we did talk a little bit about sharing and how Jesus could have helped, you know, he helps us share. And so there's just a lot of different wonderful things going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's a miracle no matter which way you look at it.
Yes. Did you find it easier to share at some deeper level because you've been at Holden all week than if you just had this and were talking to some stranger? I don't have to answer that, but I find this a very sharing community, just an absolutely wonderful place to community to be a part of, even if you're just here for the week. There's so many opportunities to do that.
We've done this several times, and every time I'm more of the audience part of it, I always have some bread in my bag, and I don't share it. And I always feel guilty afterwards.
When we did it, one time we did it with a class, and it had several people who have kids in high school or going to college or about to go to college, and they were concerned about if they gave something away, would they have enough for their kids to go to college? And they were feeling that kind of thing. And some of them said, but after Jesus looked at me, I felt I could give some of it. And so it was, they really got into a very sensitive level. But this was like session number 5 or something out of 7 maybe. And it was the same group that was together every week. So they really had developed quite a community among themselves and a comfort level, which is different than what we can do here.
Am I the only one that hadn't really thought about the fact that I'd have a bag with me?
That's interesting.
Hugh.
I didn't think about it.
No. Does it say somewhere that we have a bag? That I had a bag?
No.
So
like,
what's in your bag?
Naturally, she travels. I mean, you would have. Well, and as I think about it, you would have a bag. I mean, that was probably your.
Uh huh.
But I never thought of that before.
Uh huh. Yeah, the story has parts that are not in the Gospels, like the part about this being the Jubilee, 50 representing the Jubilee year.
Yeah.
But it was a way of connecting that, since they put the people in groups of 50, the Jubilee was a time when you would forgive debts and give the poor another chance. And that, in a way, was a demonstration. This was a demonstration of that. So that's kind of added, as are some of the other things, to get people to put themselves in that time frame. Yeah, yeah. Which is how a pastor can do it and not for parents. Okay, Dick, you want to come?
No.
When you turn it to scarcity thinking, page 6.
Yeah, I was going astray here. Okay, we want to move on now to with this experience and background to more thinking about scarcity thinking and God's abundance in America. Bergman writes about this Bible story in his article called The Liturgy of Abundance, The Myth of Scarcity. He says that Jesus demonstrated that the world is filled with abundance and freighted with generosity. If bread is broken and shared, there is enough for all. Jesus transforms the economy by blessing it and breaking it beyond self-interest. So, how is God's abundance doing in America right now?
Well, if you look at a church potluck, pretty good.
Very good. Let's see if we can connect our learning of God's abundance with enhancing the common good in America. But we have a problem. The problem is anxiety about scarcity, or the scarcity thinking. And here's a slide from our previous session. Scarcity thinking we don't have enough of whatever, leads to anxiety. That leads to accumulation of stuff or control of a situation. And that can lead to violence. Abundance thinking, on the other hand, is saying God provides enough. And that leads to trust, sharing, and peacemaking or the common good. An example now of scarcity thinking might help. After 9/11, America thought it did not have enough security. Our anxiety and the anxiety of our government led to the formation of the Department of Homeland Security. And we gave up some freedoms, including being able to go through the airport thing without taking my shoes off, in order to feel secure in our homes and when we travel. Our anxiety then led to two wars, led to CIA activity in several more countries. And now we kill people in other countries by using drone aircraft. The thought is that controlling suspects around the world helps us to maintain our security and reduce our anxiety. Scarcity thinking. What would abundance thinking look like on this same issue? Abundance thinking would flow from the idea that supporting the common good in other countries is ultimately good for the security of our country. Doing things that develop mutual trust and goodwill, even with our enemies, leads to enhanced security in both directions. Sharing food, helping countries develop, building schools, working to strengthen indigenous police action rather than military action are some ways this could happen. Conflict management could help too. So that's what abundance thinking would look like related to 9/11. Now, in a complex world with an issue this complex, there is probably needs to be some scarcity thinking and some abundance thinking. However, we feel that America's response to 9/11 over the past decade seems to be strongly tilted towards scarcity thinking. Okay, with that example, it's your turn now. Let's pair up again and choose some issue in either your church, your town, your region, or our country, or I guess there's some Canadians here too, maybe your country. Today, share what you think someone would say about your topic if they were using scarcity thinking. And then the two of you, or if it happens to be three, that's okay. Then for the same topic, figure out what abundance thinking would say about that issue.
I think it's okay this time that they're with their person they came with.
Yeah, I think so. So think about something other than the 9/11 that I just sort of gave as an example. The folks at Just came in. Do you have enough of an example? I went through 9/11 and talked about how scarcity thinking has led us to a couple of wars, etc. And now we'd like you to think about some other issue where we can come up with some more examples that you are familiar with, and think it through both with respect to scarcity thinking and abundance thinking. So have at it. Kind of form groups of two or three as you would like. You and Judy maybe refresh.
We're much further going.
Okay, let's start over here. Is this group ready to share an idea?
Are we ready? Well, we covered a lot of areas. A lot of territory. And didn't really zero in on any of them.
Come up with an issue that you could say scarcity thinking was important?
One of the issues I think we came up with was the idea of sharing the wealth. We have so much, and the rest of the world has so little.
Okay.
And rather than, you know, delivering the wealth on the head of a drone, you know, let's try some other way of you know, how much do we need? When's enough enough?
Okay.
And, you know, maybe we need to start thinking about broadening what we do instead of going in and being a policeman, going in and maybe being or giving more of a helping hand.
So we need to move from thinking we don't have enough
to where
we'll have enough and a lot to share.
That's right. Exactly.
Including education.
Education.
And we
material,
okay.
Everything
between.
You know,
defense and education.
Okay, it's kind of how we think about our own environment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And understanding the environment of others around the world. Good. This group over here.
Oh, I actually just had a question. Is it scarcity thinking to say, in the United States only, forget the rest of the world right now, that we should get rid of all these social programs because they just need to get off their dump and start working? Isn't that also scarcity thing? I'm thinking of a lot of the immigrants, which we were talking about, but people who are very, very low. I mean, we have poverty in the United States. Is that still scarcity thinking? Or is that just plain pretty?
Yes, yeah.
That's scarcity thinking.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what would be the abundance thinking that would go with that? What would be thinking of?
They need help until they can't get on their feet.
If you help them,
and some never will be.
There was a comment over here. If
you could help them, they would be productive.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
And over here? Didn't you start?
No, I was just becoming over here.
Oh, okay.
Okay, what group's ready to share next? How about the one in the middle here?
We also talked about the global issues and the relative wealth of the United States compared to other countries, and how we can see the example of abundant thinking, and we learn from the poorer countries how they don't have that same reference point that we do, and yet are so generous.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We also talked about the situation from Arizona and church budgets as other examples of scarcity.
Oh, would you like to talk about the
Yeah, hand up in the back corner, Dick.
Oh.
We started off, we kind of moved around a little bit, but we started off talking about the elections and the rhetoric, and that it's really geared towards preying on scarcity thinking and kind of all the politicians are using that to their advantage. And then we kind of delved into two different areas. We talked about health care, and you know, because a lot of that scarcity thinking rhetoric is around, you know, sustainability of Medicare and future availability of health care benefits. And then, since I'm in health care, I know we're acutely aware that we're we're an unsustainable thing, and we just can't keep doing things the way we're doing. So how do we cut costs in healthcare and yet keep quality where people expect it to be? That's our, that's what we worry about all the time, I can tell you. And there's a tremendous amount of waste in healthcare. And so there is the abundance there. It's just getting resources to where they need to be, reducing that waste, getting focused. And I think, you know, there is abundance, but we're, if we keep doing things the same way as we've always done them, yes, actually scarcity thinking is probably better read on what's going on if we don't want to change. And then we kind of shifted gears and talked about students in a university setting and how they struggle with decisions around what areas they want to study and how their decisions can be influenced by the one type of thinking versus the other. And,
ah.
Yeah, so
that's an interesting example. Thank you. This group over here.
Did you have another besides what you said, Georgie?
We did immigration and energy. And our Canadian representative said we really, the Republicans have really got a scarcity thinking platform, which none of us have seen, but it's over there in Wednesday's paper, is it? That just got up here to hold somebody's name.
Walter Brueggemann says that scarcity thinking versus abundance thinking is the key issue of our time. And I heard him speak in Columbus a couple, 3 months ago, and I had never thought of that as, you know, kind of getting at the root cause, if you want to, or the root thinking of where we're at. But as you think about it, it makes some sense.
And doesn't he, in his book, talk about the scarcity thinking in biblical times? And then compares it to our country. So he really lays it on the line for us. I think we'll just go through these examples, Dick, really fast.
There you go.
Oh, so here's the quote you wanted to have.
Yeah, here's a review of Brueggemann's quote, just mentioning him. You can all just look at it. I won't read it again.
Yeah.
And Judy and I would like to share with you some of the examples that we came up with for scarcity thinking and abundance thinking. And we're just going to read these, and that'll kind of conclude today's session. Scarcity thinking. My kids won't get the best education in city schools. They won't find friends that are like them. We can afford better. Let's move.
On the other hand, our kids will make friends from different backgrounds and learn much from them. Our city has all kinds of people, and I know that in Christ, God gathers all. So let's trust that broadly educated students do make better citizens interested in the common good.
This reflects back to our conversation a session or two ago where we talked about where to live. And schools were an important part of that. And there was some scarcity thinking in the group that was around that evening and some abundance thinking. Next one. We're running out of oil. What will people do if there are shortages? There will be big lines at the gas pump. Let's form big companies to extract oil from the Middle East, and then let's use our military to protect our oil interests.
But on the same topic, someone who's thinking about abundance would say, oil supplies are getting more difficult to maintain at low prices. Let's trust each other to find ways to use less energy. Develop more shared transportation. Support alternative energy sources.
Next one. We might not have more than our parents. Immigrants might take away our jobs, and immigrant benefits will increase our taxes. America for Americans. Let's secure the borders and punish the illegals.
But abundant thinkers would say, God can be trusted to provide sufficiently for our needs. We should welcome the immigrants in our midst, as we were. and help them become productive citizens.
Another scarcity one that you guys mentioned. It's halfway through the fiscal year and our giving is way behind budget. Let's cut church staff hours and end our food pantry for the neighborhood. Then we'll really push at the board meeting to get funds to keep things going.
But abundance thinking would say, church giving is way behind at the half year point. Let's make everyone aware of what has happened with our finances and trust each other to be generous and work for our church and our neighborhood.
Another one you all mentioned. Healthcare for everyone? There won't be enough doctors. I'll have to wait for months. I want things just like they are, so I can have my joint surgery when I want.
Abundance thinking. Many people in America do not have sufficient health care. We should support a system that addresses the needs of all, not just the wants of some. Thus, I should share so that my wants do not interfere with the needs of others. You all had some good examples. We just organized them in a more succinct way that would go along with what Brueggemann says in his material. And we hope that we've helped you think about God's abundance and how it can enhance the common good of the whole community. We thank you for coming in and sharing for this great participation today, and for those of you who've been here frequent times, we have really appreciated and enjoyed ourselves tremendously. It's great to hear all your ideas. I think everybody that comes to Holden must have this great brain and thinking power and thought process. It makes them want to come here because the discussions, whether it's at the table or in the sessions, has been just fantastic, and I only wish that we weren't opposite somebody that we wanted to hear at the same time. End of the day, maybe had 40 hours, so we also could get hiking up the mountain. Is that scarcity thinking?
There is a time for everything.
Yes. Very good.
Yeah. And one of the things he says, but yes, you did have some nice hikes, so grumbling. That's fun. Compared to being on teaching staff as opposed to just coming here and just soaking it all in, that's really wonderful too. we hope that you have discovered, as we did, that where adult learning flows, Christian community and the common good abounds. And we also hope that you got some good ideas for adult education back in your home surroundings. We hope you take the flyers that we've sort of put at the door every time. Take that back to your church if you're involved in adult education. Consider our materials, as well as the Walter Brueggemann's. He certainly has some wonderful ideas. Our books are up in the bookstore right now, and we'll be again through tonight, so you can take a peek at them. They also are available, well, if you're in Columbus, they're available at the Trinity Seminary. Otherwise, they're available online. And you can see actually some of the chapters that are on our website, or you can email me and I'll send you chapters that we did not get permission to post quoted authors on our website.
Some of our materials, well, our approach to materials and to learning that you've experienced this week are all embedded in the sessions that are in the 5 curricula that we have produced. This has been about a 12-year effort for us. We retired to do this, and getting people to understand that this is a kind of a unique approach to adult learning in churches is a challenge for us, and we have really appreciated the opportunity here at Holden to get under the surface with you folks and just share some of what is available, because you can have these same kinds of sessions, only without the PowerPoint, in your own churches. You could develop your own PowerPoint, but our materials don't depend on having PowerPoint. And a lot of the visual is all either just whiteboard or flip chart. But the idea of being actively involved in the learning is embedded in all of the curricula that we've developed.
Put up the next one, Dick.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you're in a small group in the home, these work very well then too. The advantage of doing it in the home is that if you have a lot of talkers, you can go on beyond the hour that you can't do on a Sunday morning. So take your flyers and give them to somebody at your church that might be interested in looking at adult education materials, and use these ideas when you choose any of your materials, wherever it comes from. Take a look and see if there are activities like this that the learner is involved, that it's learner-centered. And we wish you well.
And if you actually do purchase the book, today's the last day of purchasing any of our curricula in the bookstore. We'll be taking those home, I think, or at least most of them. And if you purchase this at the bookstore, home benefits.
That's right. That's right. They do. I want to say that the Feeding of the 5,000 is in the Summer of Christian Life series, and part of the Seasons of Christian Life series. The summer book is called Seasons of Christian Life: Choices, Challenges, and Celebration. The four season books cover each one for each of the seasons of life. The spring is for post-high school and post-college students that don't have children, just starting on their careers. Summer is for people who have children and are getting going on their family life, their work life. Autumn is our time when you're thinking about retiring or are retired. The winter of Christian life, that one is about the end of life stages, and it can be about somebody who's 85 and in the hospital hooked up to all the machines with several different illnesses, or it could be someone who's 35 and has breast cancer and is chosen hospice care. So we compare those kinds of things.
And all of them are intergenerational.
Yes,
as far as the audience is concerned.
When we've taught autumn, people say, well, maybe I should talk to my parents about their legacy. One of the sessions is if you want to have a living will, that would be in the autumn book. So there are things for all different generations in whatever book that you might choose. So anyways, we're very happy that we've been here at Holden and have had a wonderful time. And we thank you all for your great participation. It's wonderful to have all these conversations going on. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.